As long as it will be explained to members, for we have dealt with the reports, and then ours is only to adopt them after the quorum. I think you can proceed. That's why I'm saying, let it be explained to them to say, we have started this meeting, we didn't adopt the position at the quorum, can we adopt them? That's my proposal.
If it's fine, nobody objects who's not here, then it's fine. But if you get one objection, you start afresh. Specifically with a technical thing. Anybody gets up and say, but you know, you didn't quorate, there was no quorum. How could you have done this? What do you respond to? Or unless you ask for condonement afterwards.
I think I agree with the police. You can't write the coming to the
But perhaps we have a whip. Perhaps the whip should explain what's going on here. They're arriving in the absence of members.
By the way, like, there would be various reasons why people are not here.
Question on this. I can't recall this. Was everybody of this committee invited?
You are one member of the
committee.
Chair, if I can adopt it by my own request, that seeing it, it was apparently circulated last night, which I haven't seen, if we have questions, that we just perhaps get an opportunity to later to raise questions after we peruse the report.
Yes. No, what we are when we engage with the classmates, More especially because we got a sense that those who had not been invited were the ones who would have given us the real story.
Alright, that is an observation. It's noted, it's going to be captured accordingly. Any other issue that is being raised? Honorable Mpambo, spoke. Thank you, Chair. The issue of the discussion that we had with the traditional leaders that were there, they clearly stated that the main problem of what was happening in Vuani, as much as it is stated, is the demarcation processes that had caused the banning of school. It was far more than the demarcation. It was also because of the tender issuing beyond the demarcation, and that is not captured.
We can put that one in as it is alleged,
yes.
Because there is no proof, there is
yes,
no evidence.
Alleged.
That yes, it is alleged,
yes.
That some suspicions are that it was because of the tendering.
All right. That is noted. Which area do you want us to insert it? On which page?
I'll be looking for it. But it's on the meeting we had with the traditional leaders.
Okay, it will be the same page then. It will be page, I'll tell you now. It will be page 5. 4.1.2. Are you getting it from there? Yeah. Oh. No, kind of that one. There is another allocation, it looks like that. There is another allocation. Or top
of it.
I hope we capture that issue after the meeting, whatever issues that arise. Honorable people.
Chairperson, with what Honorable Harting has said, I want to move for the adoption of the report and commend the committee for the improvement that they've shown when we visited Northern Cape. I think the issue of Limpopo was addressed, though we aren't in Limpopo. It was addressed of the attempt that they took when we were in the Northern Cape. We wish them they continue in the spirit, because we cannot come here and complain about the same issue. Thank you.
Thank you. There is a move for adoption, taking into account the suggestions by the members. Any second? Or the report in the seconding? Thank you very much. The report is so adopted. And then we look at the report of the Northern Cape. It has arrived. Page 1, I'm going to try to move a bit first. Page 1, it gives the focus areas of our visit and a little bit of background. Page 2 is the delegation and the number of schools that we were going to be visiting. Our engagement with the MEC and the issues that she raised when she addressed us. It goes on up to page 4.
My apology to be late, Honorable Chairperson.
Mm.
I just want to check this report. Is it Northern Cape or what? The one you are reading right now.
It's Northern Cape, Honorable Chairperson. Oh. I said so.
Okay.
It's Honorable Chairperson.
Okay.
We have dealt with the others. We're now on the third one.
Okay.
Mm. And then the issue. our engagement with SATU, one of the teacher unions, on page 4, as well as FETSAS. And then NASGP, observations and recommendations, then visit to the schools. On page 6, Hopetown High School, challenges that you observe there and the recommendations and observations. Then went to Petrusville 4.2. The challenges, the observations and recommendations. Then we went to Richmond High School, well, page 7. And then there are recommendations and challenges. Then we went to Inokun Tsetwa High School. We observed some challenges. There are recommendations by the committee. Then we went to Tron. With a litany of challenges listed there and observations. of the committee. And there is also quite a list of recommendations of the committee. Then 4.6, we went to Prisca High School. Challenges and observations and recommendations. Then the High School Douglas, Wallace Douglas. On page 11, observations and recommendations. And then 4.8, Karikama, War School. Observations and recommendations. And then page 13 is the beginning of the wrapping up session with all the relevant stakeholders. Where we had a presentation once again by the head of department giving us those points that you see there. And then it goes on up to page 15, 17, and lastly page 18. That is the end of the report, honourable members. I seek another member to move and another one to adopt.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. I move for adoption of the report.
Thank you. Any second? Honorable Pavos Begwana is seconding. Thank you very much. Then lastly, Honorable Members, quickly, let us look at the minutes. They're not long. What I picked up with the minutes, Honorable Members, is that we had agreed in Lomthando that when we give the department a leeway to respond in writing on some of the issues because we are always pressed for time, those areas that were left unresponded to must be captured in the minutes so that you can be able to make a follow-up. Because if we don't capture them in the minutes, then it becomes difficult for us to follow up on the department as to say, Minister, this issue was left ending or DG. So please observe very carefully. When questions are raised, you note those that were responded to, but those that were not responded to, and they fall within the category of written responses, note them. Thank you. Page 1, honourable members, of the minutes of the 22nd of February. Page 1 is the attendance register. I hope it is correct. Page 2, the beginning of the discussion and the presentation, remarks of the minister, and the presentation by the DG. Page 3, deliberations continue. Page 4, deliberations with the department continue, issues raised by members. And then point 3, consideration and adoption of the minutes of the previous meeting. And page 5, first closure. I seek an honourable member to move. The Honourable Hutton is moving adoption. Any seconder? Honorable Samka is seconding. Honorable members, thank you very much. Thank you. We've covered quite a bit of ground. We can then allow the department to please come in.
We are committed to 10 minutes. We will report the new copy that's being called. They are going to report every input of the member. Like with the highlights, you can just say Mr. Hutton has highlighted spelling errors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or minor amendments.
Yeah.
So we just start with the internal business, just in very few minutes, and now we need to invest the
But I'm sure it was, he said that if you want to go home, if you want to start again on Friday, if you feel like you weren't briefed enough because it was such a mess this morning. But then I told him that I'm sure you're going to stay.
But you actually doing the report?
I think that's what he said. Because there's a problem with someone.
Yeah, the monitor didn't
come. The monitor couldn't come, so he said I must do the report.
What is it for now? Now the department will present to a presentation, and then members will talk for sure.
Is it for now? On the phone, like, I'm just making sure I record everything so that, because obviously I know my face.
Yeah.
But in fact, I'm trying to fill in for someone, but you help me during the to try to figure out what's happening. That's what he said, I think, on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't stress too much about the presentation, giving it. You can try off the meeting, speak to the secretary.
Is it the lady there?
It would be the lady sitting next to the chair. Or one of the people who just be walking around handing out documents, the assistant or something. I also don't worry too much about capturing what they say in the presentation. Just listen to it and try to understand it. Because afterwards you'll do like a summary of the presentation.
Okay, yeah.
But in the discussion you need to capture
okay.
every question and every answer. Unless if you have a 3 plug, and I have a 2-point plug, so I need an adapter, yeah. Website and look at our reports are done, will be fine. Yeah. And you'll see your recorder will, if you leave your recorder, it will go dark.
Oh wow.
But then if you want to check out it's still recording, you just press lightly. And as long as you see the seconds, you'll be
okay. Sure.
You'll be fine.
Okay.
And if there's a break, if there's a tea break, don't switch it off, just leave it running.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you can pause it, but you might forget to unpause it.
I think the reason is just that you just save and then start again. And
oh, no, just leave it running.
Is it
cold,
like 3 hours
or two? Oh, yeah, that's cold. I can record all day. I've recorded it 10 hours or something.
Really?
Mm.
Yeah. They just leave it. That's
yeah.
I'm always scared of it. God, if it goes off.
Oh, no, these ones, no, they're very reliable. Yeah.
Okay. Sure, hectic. So now you work in Poland?
No, for PNG. So that could be a reading after. Department of Basic Education.
And what?
Oh, and I don't know what the SRS is. Oh, Sports and Recreation.
Sports and Recreation.
Oh, right now.
No.
Good morning. DG for Basic Education, as well as the high officials of the Department of Sports and Recreation, and the delegation also of officials from the DBE. We welcome you this morning. There will be no need of introductions because we've had more than 1,000 engagements ever since the start of the fifth parliament. And we are going to get started with the business of the day without any further waste of time. Our purpose of engagement today, as we all understand, is to look into the issue of school sport based on the MOU that we believe to be existing between the Department of Basic Education and the Sports and Recreation South Africa. There is also an element of regarding sport, an element of municipalities, but I don't want to get into that. Let us look at what is actually happening with regard to sport. It is a very important aspect of a learner's life to be physically fit. Not only that, to have their brains active and alert all the time, and also some of them develop to be professionals in the various sporting codes. So they are kept meaningfully and purposefully if they get involved in sport, because it assists them to refrain from doing other things that young people do, to be involved in things that are destructive to young people, drugs, alcohol abuse, unplanned pregnancies. They come out of being not meaningfully occupied. Now, it is a very important aspect. Let us then not belabor the point and hand over. You are going to direct us, DG, as to how we are going to structure a presentation. I don't know if you are going to have a combination or you are separated. But let me leave that aspect over to you. You're going to direct us. But welcome, thank you. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you very much. Just to indicate that Umalusi's CEO and management are also in the room. For the next presentation, so they are seated right at the end there, and maybe also to take this opportunity, Chair, just to tender the apology of the Minister and the Deputy Minister. The Minister really tried this morning to speak to the President to release her from Cabinet, and the President flatly refused and said this is the day for Cabinet and she'll have to remain until the entire duration of Cabinet. Okay.
No, thank you for reminding me about Umalusi. They did greet me as they came in, but I should have acknowledged. Thank you very much. you're most welcome as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We're supposed to be presenting as basic education and sports and recreation. I was informed that the DG for sports and recreation was going to form part of this meeting. But at the moment, he's not pitched, and neither do we have anyone from sports and recreation. Nonetheless, we've got two parts of the presentation. Our part will be delivered, Chair, and it's going to be presented by Dr. Whittle, who is the branch head where sports and recreation is located in the department. So we're ready to present, and Dr. Whittle will run with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. Chairperson, shall I assume that I've got about 15, 20 minutes? Is that the assumption? So in terms of the presentation outline, those are the key issues that I will address during this particular presentation. In terms of the MOU that was signed, this is in fact our fifth year of the MOU, and therefore we will start the we've already started a process of review. But in terms of the MOU, the DBE are responsible for the first three levels of the system, which is mass participation at school level, local competitions, and circuit competitions. The level 4 to 6 is then managed by SRSN. In terms of the MOU, we are of the opinion that we've made quite a few key achievements during this period. We've established a joint task team to coordinate school sports nationally jointly as both DBE and SRSA. It also involves the national federation, the school's code structures, as well as our provinces. That task team meets on a quarterly basis to provide guidance to the system. Participating and registered schools have grown remarkably since the MOU came into effect. And we've broadened the offering of schools' codes from 4 to 16, you know, during the last 5 years. And this also includes 9 indigenous games that have been added. In the last year, there's been a decision working together with SRSA to segment the annual school sports program into, and this is at the national championships level, autumn, winter, and summer games. And I'm sure DG SRSA can speak a bit further about those. It's important to recognize that physical education in schools is quite an important aspect of the school sports policy. And in South Africa, over the last couple of years, sadly, this hasn't come into its own. It hasn't flourished. And so what we've initiated in 2014, actually, together with some of the universities in South Africa, is to make a concerted effort to improve the quality of physical education in our schools. We're currently participating in a project together with UNESCO that was launched in 2015, and it aims to provide support to UNESCO's piloting in 5 countries, Fiji, Mexico, South Africa, Tunisia, and Zambia, and to work with us specifically to strengthen physical education in the curriculum. So in our case, as you know, physical education is located within life orientation. We also later on, in fact early in April, we'll have a symposium together with our universities and other partners on what it is that we should be doing to strengthen physical education. Unfortunately, in South Africa, what has happened over the last couple of years is that many of the universities have phased out the training of physical education teachers, and so there's a real gap in the system that we're trying to plug at the moment. I shall provide a brief overview of where we are currently, you know, in terms of the progress, Chairperson. As you can see, in terms of our school league system, we currently have 13,500 schools registered. It has grown quite dramatically over the last 5 years. I think we started out with about 5,000 or so schools, so we've been able to grow the program consistently over the years. There's a few provinces, as you'll notice, where there are particular challenges. And those provinces, if you look at the slide in Gauteng, you have almost 100% of schools registered. And remember, registration is but the first step. It doesn't mean that they're participating at the rate that they should. It just means that they're registered, and so there is some playing taking place. In Western Cape, we're doing quite well as well. In Mpumalanga, over the last few years, we've come up quite a bit. We're doing a lot better. Limpopo, as you can see, it's about half of the schools that are participating, and of course, that's a real challenge. In KZN, we're close to 60, but again, it's not good enough. Free State, just about half. Northern Cape, with all of its challenges, particularly related to distance, that poses a real problem. But it's really in the Eastern Cape where we're struggling, because the Eastern Cape, only about 32% of schools are registered to participate in the school sports. If you look at the budgets, and this is a challenge that I'm sure DGSRSA will reflect on as well, you can see over the MTF, even though the budget allocation at the moment for school sports is already low, those budgets are shrinking over the next 3 years. Eastern Cape has got the biggest budget, but the lowest participation rates, and that's, of course, also a challenge. All other provinces over the MTF seem to be dropping, except KZN is going up really slightly, and Limpopo has got quite a nice injection over the next year, a few years. But you can see all other provinces are completely inadequately funded for school sports. At around R1 million seems to be the average for most of the provinces. In terms of human resource capacity in districts, and this is another challenge, of course, that we're facing, if there's nobody that's actually coordinating school sports, you are going to struggle. And in education, there's very little in terms of human resource capacity that is provided. One of the key challenges, of course, that we're confronting in school sports is the issue of facilities. If children do not have the facilities to play, it's impossible to actually play. And the chair's earlier introductory comment around the role of SALGA and the municipalities in this context is quite critical. We've made the decision as part of the norms and standards that when new schools are constructed, those schools must be provided with sporting facilities. And that's something that we're pushing for as the department and that we're following through on. But the backlog in this regard is immense. And so we've entered into a number of partnerships with the private sector to begin to deliver facilities to schools. And some of those partnerships are listed there. I'm not intending to mention all of them. But one of the key decisions that we've made together with SRS a few years ago is that the most cost-effective way to provide sporting facilities is to provide multi-purpose courts, because those courts would enable you to play more than one sporting code at a school. The importance of the multi-purpose courts also is that they can be utilized by more than one school. So, for example, 2 weeks ago in Upington at a school called Roosendaal that won our physical education challenge, we opened a multi-purpose court. And in that area, there's about 5 or 6 other schools, and we invited the school principals to the opening of that facility so that they also feel that the facility is open to them and can be used by their schools. In terms of the partnerships that we have, in addition to the partnership that focuses specifically on the provision of facilities, we also have partnerships that focus on some of the interventions that we initiated as the DBE. The Let's Play Challenge, of course, has been going for the last 10 years, and DBE has been a key partner in that one. And together what we're trying to do, Chairperson, is to, like you're saying, is to up physical activity levels of children. And we do that through a national competition that we launched 2 years ago, where grade sixes participate in a physical challenge that they've got to navigate within 45 minutes. And the number of children that you get through the obstacle course within the 45 minutes, that's the score of your school. We've grown it from about 400 when we started. We're just over 1,000 schools last year, and we're hoping to increase that even further this year. We're working with UNICEF. They're supporting us on the physical education component of the work. I think the last time we briefed you, we spoke about the cricket hub system that we're doing with Cricket South Africa. SRSA is also a key partner in that process. And what we've done, because cricket is quite resource intensive, you need bats, you need a particular field, you need a range of sporting equipment. We've constructed 58 hubs around the country with Cricket South Africa, and those hubs serve about 20 to 30 schools that are neighboring. So those schools are then able to travel into the hub. Cricket at the moment pays for a coach, a specialized coach, to work in those facilities, and in that way we're hoping to grow the game, particularly in previously black and disadvantaged communities. Dreamfields is run by radio personality John Pullman. We work quite closely with them because they follow a very different model from the kind of hub system that we utilize in cricket in there. For them, it's not about the construction of really expensive courts or pitches. It's really about making sure that there's a playing surface available, a level playing surface that you can encourage kids to play. This model works really well in areas where schools are isolated, and so it's really, really a good model to use in rural communities where it's difficult for children to travel to. One of the key challenges of school sports, as you know, is transportation. It's about how you get children from the one school to the next on a consistent basis, because if you want them to play. Dreamfields also provides equipment and playing kits to children. Then, in terms of the Motsepe Foundation, the Motsepe Foundation signed a 10-year deal with us to make 120 million rand available. Most of that money will go to our school's Coral High Stepford, which is equally important. But a large part of the money will also come to netball and football development in the country. And we have started a conversation with them about how we need to reposition private sector support for tournaments, so that we could alleviate the resource requirements that is currently placed on SRSA because of the national championships. And that's an ongoing conversation that we're having with them. The last one, which is the SAFA Safe Hub System, is a very interesting model of how we link sports development to the reduction of delinquency. Because what SAFA has done in 5B here in Khayelitsha, they built 4 multi-purpose courts. They made those courts open to about, I think, 6 or 7 schools that are neighboring the facility. And within a period of about 3 years, the crime rate in that area dropped with about 44%, without any other interventions in that area. And that points to the importance of having children active, because it immediately leads to a reduction. We know from some of the work that's coming out of Scandinavia, for example, at the moment, that shows that when children are active, you immediately reduce issues of teenage pregnancy, drug abuse, and juvenile delinquency. So, sports must be a key component of the work that we do if we are to address those social ills. These are just some of the facilities that we opened last year. And these are Let's Play facilities, but also Builders Warehouse has donated 2 facilities for us in Soweto and Gauteng. Chairperson, I want to run very briefly through some of the challenges in addition to the ones that I've mentioned already, which is budget and, of course, HR capacity. So we've worked quite hard in the last 2 years to plan together with our districts and our provinces so that they begin to understand the importance of intra and inter-school leagues. And in some of our provinces, in Mpumalanga, Limpopo in particular, we've seen real growth over the last 2 years because of that kind of joint planning that we do with them. The inadequate facilities I've spoken about already. The challenge of parallel tournaments, the conflict of interest for education officials, and contradiction between federations and codes, these are all critical aspects that must be addressed if we are to improve sports in the country. So what happens at the moment is, let me take the example of Nestle, for example. They would sponsor a tournament that would run parallel to the inter-school leagues and parallel to the national championships. And so it means that we're splitting the resources, we have no joint development programs, and that poses a threat to the inter-school leagues. I'm hoping, you know, when DG speaks a bit later, you know, he can pick up on some of those as well. In SRSA, what they've done is to prevent sports officials, when they join the department, from playing a role in code structures or in the federations. In education, we have no such prohibition. So in our case, an education official can be an education official, but at the same time, be the president, for example, of Tennis South Africa or Tennis or Volleyball South Africa. And so they wear different hats. And sometimes when they come and meet with me, they say, I'm not here as an official from, you know, the Western Cape today. I'm here because I am the president of such and such. And that conflict of interest we often see playing out, and its impacts on the work that we can do, you know, within the sector. The other one, the contradiction between federations and codes, and again, you know, on this one we're guided by SRSA as the custodian of all sports in the country. But this is a real problem, and the SAFA-SASFA issue, for example, is a very good case in point. And the lack of human capacity I have spoken about already. So this would be my last slide, Chairperson. So in conclusion, I think that we've done relatively well over the last 5 years, you know, bearing in mind the constraints that I've mentioned already. In partnership with SRSA last year, because of the cost associated with a single national championships, bringing together, you know, 16 codes plus 9 indigenous games proved to be quite strenuous. And so the decision was made to split that into 3. I'm sure, again, DGSRSA will speak a little bit further about the continued impact of resource constraints, because when we thought we were going to drastically reduce the cost, in fact, it seems like, you know, cost remains a particular challenge. The current review of the Sports and Recreation Act and the DBS, the DBE, SRSA MOU, we're hoping that process will be, you know, even though it started, will be concluded within the next year or so, and that would then allow us to address some of these key challenges that I've mentioned already. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much for the presentation. I suggest, honourable members, that maybe we give a chance to Sports and Recreation in South Africa to do a presentation first. Only thereafter can we then begin to engage both presentations. Let's welcome the DG of Sports and Recreation in South Africa. You got in when the meeting had already started. I suppose you've got an explanation for that, DG. I was just wondering, no apology, no DG, nobody. It has never happened before. I immediately suspected that there is something wrong somewhere. And I said to myself, I just hope that it is not a plane crash or something. Nonetheless, on a serious note, welcome with your officials. We are going to hand over to you because the whole issue is about the MOU that exists between yourselves and the Department of Education and what you have done in that regard, and also the challenges that you are facing and the successes. I'm handing over to you. I don't know. We don't have your presentation yet. Do you have a presentation, my lord? Oh, I don't have it. Oh, yes. Okay. It's this one. Let me hand over to you then, DG, to lead us through your presentation.
Good morning, Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And also, Good morning to members of the Honorable Committee. Let me first start by apologizing for arriving late for when the meeting was already on. I did send a message to the chair. We struggled. Yesterday we had to go to Durban quickly, and the flights between there and here aren't so good to connect directly. And
I didn't get the message.
Sorry,
ma'am? I say I didn't get the message, unfortunately.
No, I sent you an SMS. Honestly, I can show it now.
This has sort of a dialogue. I accept it. You wouldn't tell a lie, did you?
Yes, no, certainly I have the record.
Okay.
I've sent that, indicating that also when we landed finally, there were two accidents from there coming here. I also took a video. I don't want trouble with the committee. It's ever said that I do not take the committee seriously. But I took videos of this in the morning, and I can play it to see, because it took us 1 hour 30 minutes just to move the space of 8 kilometers, and it was quite terrible. So that's when I realized we may be slightly late, so I SMS'd the chair to say, please accept our apologies, but we will make possible that we try and arrive on time.
No, we had a similar problem, DG.
Oh, okay.
We drove from Akasha Park to Parliament 2.5 hours today.
Oh, okay.
There was a problem.
All right. So, Chair, I will not waste time. I'm one who's not known for being very short, but I don't want to repeat most of the things that have been said by our colleagues in DBE. We certainly agree about most of the things that have been highlighted in terms of the first presentation that has been made. There would be key things that I think we need to bring to the fore of the meeting to consider in this regard. And my view would be that perhaps I need to focus on quite a few things to elucidate where we think the challenges are greater. You want me to see that? So, Chair, as I've indicated, I would not want to go into the deeper issues pertaining to this, and I'm going to skip most of the slides, because as I was sitting there, I saw that some of the things I wanted to speak about have already been covered in the other presentation. And I think I can say with certainty now that we and Basic Education are now fully aligned about what Basic Education ought to do and what sport we have to do. There are challenges at all levels, on the issues that we sport must do, and also the issues that Basic Education has got to do. And we obviously have the issues we continuously engage with Basic Education about, and we are now up for review of the MOU. 2017 is the last year in the 5-year cycle, and we then immediately after this year's championships have to do a bigger review between us and Basic Education about how the system works. We do conduct the review on an annual basis as well, Chair, so that it is quite clear. I'll pass all of this. All right. Which brings me to the issue of the coaching framework, because the important point, and which is a big challenge for the system now, is that all over the world, school sport is driven by teachers. This is the truth of the matter. It's only here in South Africa we're trying to do something different, but school sport right through the world is driven by teachers. And if I calculated the number of staff members we national SRSA have and the staff in provinces, all of them, including those who do academies and other things, and we include them together. We are just 1,100, and there are 24,000 schools. So even if we are to say all of them must stop and just do only school sport, we will not be able to be in all schools and will not be able to run the program as it's supposed to be run. So certainly, school sport has got to be driven by teachers primarily. And what our officials ought to do is to provide support to the teachers to be able to do the job properly. But now I'm sure you know, maybe it's an issue that many people don't want to talk about. But the reality of the matter is that the biggest teacher union has a problem with this arrangement. And where we are sitting, we believe that there is a way to remedy this situation. Because previously, prior to the new Schools Act, school sport was compulsory. It wasn't optional. Right now, it's an opt-in system. It means schools have got to ask parents, for parents to agree and sign that their children will participate in sport in schools. And because it is an opt-in, previously, you were required actually to prove why you would not play. You had to indicate whether you were sick or have a doctor's letter or otherwise. And so right now, it's the reverse. So most of you who take your children to private schools would know that at the beginning of each year or the quarter, you are made to choose the course the child is going to play and sign that permission letter to say, my child must play. You know. So this is a bit of a challenge. Our view is that and that's the type of thing we can do, but we are proposing to our counterparts in basic education that they amend the Schools Act. First, to make school sport compulsory, but secondly, to also make provision of quality physical education compulsory in schools. Lastly, the power to designate sporting codes right now, as the law provides for, sits with the school governing bodies. We think this is a problem at two levels. First one is that the priority codes for the country in terms of the Sport and Recreation Act are determined by the Minister of Sport and Recreation. But the articulation of that, and considering that school sport ought to serve as the basis and the bedrock for sports development, this power now has been devolved to governing bodies. Now we know that the governing bodies have been using this power quite badly, to say the least, particularly in the historically white schools, where the designation of codes all the time says rugby, and that we're a rugby school, and we think they don't want football at all, and they do not want that. So our viewpoint is that we must make the so-called the Big Five compulsory priority codes across all schools. And then the schools can then opt from the remainder of the 16 priority codes, the other 11. They can then choose hockey or any other thing as an addition. But in terms of the seasonal tournaments, quarter by quarter, they at least must have those basic five, inclusive of football and rugby. We're not saying they must not have rugby. But they refuse football. And I've seen, when I used to stay next to the third floor of World Square, I would pass there when the school is out, and I would see the little white children playing football, waiting for a school bus outside. But inside the school, they are not allowed to play football. Football is not a selected code for that particular school. It's only rugby and netball that are designated as such. Now, we can leave it to the school governing bodies to do that, because they also do it. They believe that once they put football, they have opened the floodgates for black kids and everybody and so on, and they use that power for also other wrong reasons, you know, and they tie it often with language, which is quite a terrible thing to do. But we believe that we must take that power away and designate it. The power to designate the codes must remain as they are, and we would want articulation between this law and the National Sport and Recreation Act, so that both the ministers may, in consultation with each other, tie codes and also agree on the designation for compulsory codes. So that's what we need, I think, as the first and foremost thing, because ultimately the provision of training for coaches, all teachers are a priority for us. Right now, we also work on an opt-in basis. So schools that register that you have seen there, we are almost halfway now with the number of schools that we get registered. But if the truth is to be told, it's not all those 13,500 schools that are registered that actually play. It's actually half that who play. So if in a year we get 8,000 schools to participate, I'm very excited because on a rent-to-rent basis, the amount of money we have between us and basic education in terms of current budgeting levels suggests that we should only be able to reach 5,500 schools. So if we get 8,000 to participate, we are quite excited. But there is no budget, no money for this type of thing. Now, this is where we have some of the biggest challenges. Each time the parents complain or communities complain or even the media write negatively about the school sport program, they complain that it's a Wednesday and it's a Wednesday afternoon, but they do not see children playing sport in schools and after school. But I can assure you, go to historically white schools, you are going to see that happen on a Wednesday in the afternoon. Nobody forces anybody to do anything. There's no need for any official, whether from basic education or from sport, to go to that school to say play. They play, and it's just as good as it is. And in the past dispensation, my former colleague Bob Subrayan, his predecessor, invited me to go with him to the conference of the St. Africans Honor Vaser Guinea. They ran their meeting nicely in Afrikaans, and I was in sixes and sevens. I could not understand what they were doing. But after they clapped their hands, it was only when I realized that there is something happening, and their president said, this is the part you must be happy. And I asked why, and then he translated to me to say, we have just taken a resolution that all our members will give at least 6 hours a week towards school sport for free. We don't want payment or overtime or anything, we'll just do it. And then I was excited to hear their resolution because this was 2012. And you can see that for them, their motivation they wrote there was that the quality of the white child, the education being given to a white child is non-negotiable. But in contrast to the bigger teacher union, that's not the type of thinking about the quality of education to be given to the majority black child. And we are told that if that is to happen, they ought to be paid overtime and all sorts of things, and we have a problem. So certainly intra-school and inter-school, as well as most districts, the tournament at those lower levels don't really happen. And the cheapest form of school sport is inter-school. It's where class 4A plays against 4B on a Wednesday afternoon. Because the children don't need to travel anywhere, they don't need to do anything. Give them a ball and just get them to play. That's the cheapest form of school sport we have. And that is the mass participation element of it, to ensure that they continuously play. They don't have to be champions, or they don't have to compete against anybody. But the so-called local festival, where schools in the same locality can play against other schools, and you keep the scores and you do that, and you can even run it on a round robin basis, and they can continuously play to the end. That's the type of thing that we are talking about, and for which we require that the teachers and the circuits and everybody also take this matter serious and also look at it and provide us with annual fixtures so we can monitor. So we're being criticized that the first time you really see that there is something happening is when these children go to a provincial tournament or to a national tournament, which if you are building a superstructure with no base, then you have a big problem. And so that is why we believe that we need to attend to that issue. Now, I won't waste your time about the 16 codes. You have seen them. We're reviewing these codes. We just believe there are too many. There are too many, and we need to narrow them. Australia just have 4 codes. UK has 5 codes. New Zealand has three codes. I mean, I can go on and on about the so-called world beaters. They just have very few codes. Our budget is quite small compared to those countries, but yet we spread it too thin to make really a huge impact. So we want to focus really ultimately on the so-called the big five. I know this may not be palatable with black parents who believe that their children must be taught how to swim and so on and so on. But ultimately, we need to designate the codes, and we too are thinking about changing our funding formula. That some codes must be state-aided codes, but they are not state-funded. They are state-aided, and they are codes that we must not pay for at all. Things like equestrian, we mustn't pay for that thing. For a poor country like we are...
Let me just interrupt you. I would request that you run through quite quickly, because we have almost to do a presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to take you to... that's the evolution it has been spoken about. I want to show you... Yes, I am going to fly. Yes. All right. Chair, this is just an indication of how provinces are performing in as far as a whole host of things and what is outstanding in terms of reach. What is our biggest concern now is that the province's expenditure is quite high. They are almost all of them about 90%, but you can see what is outstanding in terms of reach. And you'll see that in those things like academies, those are the number, and largely these are teachers that they've got to train. You can see the outstanding numbers per each province, but almost all of them are not doing very well in as far as this is concerned. And that's our biggest concern right now, that the expenditure is high, yet the performance is quite low. And you'll also see that the Eastern Cape is the worst culprit when it comes to this. Okay. When you look at the number of schools, hubs, and clubs that are provided with attire and equipment, again, you can see the picture there. It's only the Western Cape that really has done met its target fully. The rest are a bit struggling there. Now, I want to take you to... Some of these things have been spoken about, but I want to show you the dashboard of customized indicators in terms of usefulness of the findings once we go and audit them to check that indeed what they say is correct. If you look at the number, I'm not going to go into each and every indicator, but you'll see that for most, on the little that they have done, the good thing is that it can be verifiable that it has happened. Limpopo, obviously, being... And this, what the dashboard I'm giving you is the dashboard of the Auditor General. Ours was even a bit more harsher than what the AG has found, but this is the AG. It's not us. It's really the AG that found. Western Cape, we couldn't really verify the data. And I think the issue is that they carefully not select those indicators, which are sectoral indicators. And I think they do them clever so that in the scores they look very good. But the quality of the delivery cannot be tested if you have not selected the indicators. You see it again. Northwest, same story. And I think the story of the Northwest is a very sad one, primarily because the Premier there, while he's head of government, he's got the power, yes, to select that how he constitutes his government. But mixing sport with basic education into one portfolio is a big mistake. I can tell you, this man is my colleague. I know that on his performance agreement, up there will be metric results, delivery of books and all of that. School sport will be a footnote to him. But to me, school sport will be the key priority thing. It actually weighs 45% of my performance indicators. And the rest becomes other things. But his priorities and mine won't be the same. And because education is the key priority for government, an HOD is going to be forced to look at education and ignore sports. And that's exactly what is happening there. And you see it live every day. And this thing was said that, no, when you mix them together, because school sport is the biggest priority, school sport will benefit a lot when it has a champion who's also a MEC for education. But the reverse is the truth. And again, you can see they also, like Western Cape, didn't select that. And Limpopo, again, is running slightly behind. But most of the provinces are performing quite very well, as you can see. Now, Chair, I just want to cover the few things that I think must also be looked at. ASIDI, we accept that that may be the solution. But we looked at that, we did a run on the last 33 schools that have been built in ASIDI. And what is sad is that only 13 of those have new facilities. The rest, they are new schools that are being built. They are supposed to be built with the new norms and standards of basic education, which says that they must provide facilities. But yes, we go there. You'll find that school nutrition, you'll find the kitchenette there. They built it. They built also libraries. But the sports facilities are not there. And I think we are not so worried about the schools built under apartheid, because we've got a plan on how we eradicate that. We know that at current funding levels, it's going to take us 123 years to take a single facility to all the schools that have not been provided with that. But we are worried that the democratic government can perpetuate the legacy of apartheid by building new schools and not providing facilities in them. And so I think that is our biggest concern. And that's why, while we know that we say with the new schools, they must meet the new norms, but if you do a run on the schools that have been built now and you actually go out and visit them, you will see, yes, on their plans, the facilities are there. But all the time when you ask, and in many instances, the thing is signed by the principal. When you find out, the principal says he was told that they have run out of money. That's why the facilities are not there. So I think that is an issue that we can certainly do with. But the last thing from us, which has been also highlighted and which is a challenge, is the issue of the tournaments. I think here, this is an area where we and basic education have to sing from the same hymn book. Otherwise, if we do not do that, then I don't think that the country is ever going to make progress. And I'll tell you why, because there is an underlying political challenge in all of that. First issue is that the tournaments spread us too thinly. The old bodies of sport, we have now told all of them in no uncertain terms, and they know they can't get money from us unless they align to what we're doing. But they are quick to run to basic education, which unfortunately is still funding them. And this year I wrote to my counterpart here to say, please, stop funding these people so we can align, so that we can reach more schools. Because there are schools that participate in the ABC Motsepe Cup, then they leave that, they lose in the first round, then they go on to compete in the Milo thing, and then they lose there. And then they go on, they try our own thing, they lose. And even some of the schools that are allowed to play the ISASA League, like Waterkloof, in there they are quite weak. They get beaten so quick and then they get out. Then they play our league. And in our league they are quite dominant, so they play the entire season. But these schools that hop different championships means that the participation levels will always be docked to about 6,000 schools, instead of us stretching by unifying the tournaments and having a single championship for the entire country. That would mean overnight we can reach in excess of 15,000 schools if we do that. It's just playing around with just the resources that are there in the system already. Now, we have a problem that these other tournaments happen, and what is our biggest concern, Chair, is that these tournaments are also run along racial lines. I can tell you now that the school's athletics now, that prompted me to write to my counterpart. We told them that they can't go ahead with that. Government is going to run a tournament for all the schools, irrespective whether they are formally white or for black or whatever, and all schools must participate in that, and the eliminations must happen, and only the schools that have succeeded will go to district and so on. But I can tell you, I got reports from our district officials. There has been district championships this previous weekend. And in those district championships, schools athletics, for instance, is running two parallel processes. They are having the eliminations for the government championship. They are having this little private thing on the side, where they ask parents to pay. Parents pay as high as 3,500 for a learner to participate. And they dangle a carrot that says, in that government thing, you will not get colors. But if you come to our championship, you will get colors. Somehow, miraculously, basic education fund this tournament, this parallel thing. it gives them the money, and they write proudly on their website. I'm sure you can enter their website after this meeting. They write proudly to say, while sport refused us with their money, we are going ahead without sports, that we will go ahead with basic education, which is funding us, and they put the logo of basic education there. And then they just ignore us, and they continue with this parallel thing. Our official visited those championships, some of them in Gauteng, just to go see what's happening. I mean, this parallel tournament. For starters, there were not even senior basic education managers at those tournaments to see what really happens, because I'm sure that DG, if your people go there, they will not like what they see. The culture, everything is running one way. There is a black athlete. All announcements are in Afrikaans, and even when they are calling for the kids to come compete, there are kids who don't stand up because they can't hear what's being said or what's happening. And they lose their slots of participation because the 100 meters has been run, your hit has come and passed, and you were not at the starting line. But, I mean, how fair could that be when the child has not even heard what is being said, and when no one makes an effort to be accommodative and to promote multilingualism and to know that other kids can be heard and can hear what is happening with the tournament, and which is what they don't do when they work with us on the mainstream government tournament. But with this private thing, they do their own thing there. And I think the day we and basic education lay down the law and say, we will no longer fund these things and will no longer recognize these things, everybody must collapse all their efforts and we work on one championship, and all schools that need to participate must work on this, I don't think we'll ever make progress, and we'll forever have the impression that says that the white kid is a superior kid who has some extra powers, and they certainly perform differently than the black kids. And I think that is not a way to go in a democracy and in the republic. So those are some of the challenges, but I have to commend basically, we come from Fache. From the time we signed the MOU in 2011 to where we are today, we have made tremendous progress, and we have, and since the arrival of DDG Whittle, I can assure you that we have made a lot of progress, and we have managed to align fully. We're tackling the challenges. This now I'm talking about are the few remaining sticky areas which, if resolved, will make the system much more robust, and we can reach much more kids with just the resources we have now, before we even ask for additional resources. Thank you.
It's good that you're both here. As long as you don't fight, we are happy as a committee. As long as you improve the conditions out there of service delivery, we are the happiest lot as a committee. However, we are at an advantage because of the fact that you are both here, so you'll be able to respond to the questions by members here and now. Over to you, Honourable Members. Honourable Hassan.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kaola, Honourable Saka.
A lot of information and a lot of things that have been said, and perhaps everything else being put in context. But going out from the education presentation about the number of schools participating, it's actually impossible to judge from the number of schools, registered schools, what's the impact. Because it can be very small schools while the biggest ones are out. Or it can big schools, you don't know. If you say in Gauteng you've got 97.89 registration, it's very impressive. But a column with learners would actually give the reach, the number of the impact that we are getting with the registration and with the budget. So this doesn't really give the picture. We know in the Eastern Cape we've got a whole big number of very small schools. So you give a percentage of 32.06% of the Eastern Cape, but that can actually be 70% of the learners. We don't know. Then, so I would please ask, can we just very easily add the learners, and then we can evaluate the impact. Also, now if we're going to take it to the budget, because we don't know how many learners are affected. It appears then on the budget that the poorest performing province is getting the biggest chunk of the budget, which is the Eastern Cape. Very little to show for it. In fact, if we break it down to school, it is 6,172 rand per school, if you take the 11 million into those schools, participating schools, which actually says nothing because you don't know how many learners are being reached. On the other hand, the second best performing province is getting less than 10%, that's the Western Cape, of that budget. Also, I don't know what we're reaching there, but I would like to see, to know, understand why the Western Cape is getting, apart from the very small Northern Cape, the smallest chunk of per province of the budget. I don't understand that. And it's actually, if we compare it with, say, Mpumalanga, where it's 8,007 rand per school, the Western Cape allocation per school is 795 rand per school, which doesn't really make sense. Also, if you just divide it by the schools, it's a vast difference between the schools on the top end, 8,000, and the bottom end, 795, and even 6,000 in the Eastern Cape. I would like to get some understanding of that. I also, just a comment, I also had to do a presentation at that SAOU annual conference in Port Elizabeth once, and it was in fact on doping in sport. I think to say it's white schools and to label it as such is politicizing, over-politicizing it. Because when I was there, there was a number of colored schools, but the emphasis on Afrikaans-speaking community. Now, I agree. It appears to be that. And the sentence is to... Well, I find the presentation on that and a few others highly politicized. But I think what should be acknowledged is that in some schools in our country, and apart from the trade union schools, and even in the Eastern Cape, in the rural places where you find that there are dedicated educators going out of their way, going out of the trade union guidelines or whatever, and commit themselves through all race groups and even with very limited resources. I've seen it in the Eastern Cape, I even saw it in Bembe, with almost nothing, that there are educators who go out and commit themselves. And that is, if you don't have that level of commitment, you and identifying talent at that young age, we will not be able to get the medals that your department wants to get at Commonwealth Games and at the Olympic Games and even in the zone competitions and in the Africa competitions. And I don't know how we're going to turn that around to do talent identification at a very basic thing. The other thing that I think is a distortion in my mind is the concept of mass participation. In your DBE presentation, mass participation here is coming up with an ideal, having weekly competitions at the lower level, and then monthly competitions and whatever. But in reality, it doesn't happen. You go to any level, you will have your inter-class or inter-house or whatever competitions once in a sport in a year, and then the inter-school competition will happen once, and that's it. And even then it goes to district or province, but there's no sustainable, I've never seen any sustainable mass participation model here that's working. You get the rush in the beginning of the year, beginning of the season, everybody participates in athletics, and then after 2 weeks it's all gone, and very few continue. Same with rugby, same with football, same with cricket, any sport. There's no sustainable sport participation that's happening. And, well, I see it in my province where mass participation is in a provincial level is one thing, where a lot of t-shirts are being printed, distributed, a lot of money gets poured in, and there's a 5 kilometer walk or run once a year, and that's mass participation. There's nothing sustainable. We want to create a culture of sport. There must be some sustainability. If we get some responses on that, I'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, colleagues, the DGs, thanks for your presentations. I want to agree here, Chairperson, with the Honourable Hutting in respect of the practical part of the mass participation. Really, there needs to be a program that should, like you are saying, sustainable, that the communities, the schools, the STPs, all the stakeholders will know, a program that will run for the whole year, which will be known that this is the season for this kind of, this code of sport, and this is what is happening. Because really, it's just on paper. It suffers down there when it comes to implementation. And the other part to that is the flow of information. It's very poor. It's very, very poor. I've seen these things being coordinated, and the teachers are running them, and the flow of information is very poor. Some schools don't get the information, they are remote, and so on and so forth. But I also want to agree with the teachers. You see, the competing priorities in the country and government make this MOU very, very difficult to implement. It makes it, you know, and I don't blame education. I don't blame education. Of course, sport, because it's their field, they'll complain, but you can't blame education. End of the year, we want results. We are not focused about how many children were able to go to Europe for what sport. We want to know how many matriculants have got the bachelor passes. So it makes it very, very difficult. This MOU, I really don't know, Chairperson. As a result, when education is reporting to us, when you go to page 9, KwaZulu-Natal, look at the district officials they have, only 18, 12 districts. Look at the provincial officials they have in sport, only 3, for the whole province of KwaZulu-Natal. Now, what can you expect, you see? Look at the budget allocations. KZN, 5.9 million. What can you do? You know, it's because of the you can't blame them. It's because of these competing priorities. This plan, which is a very good plan, I want to go back to it and refer to again what Honourable Hutting said. I don't know how you are going to coerce the unions to allowing teachers really to take sport as a passion and a commitment and a sacrifice and so on and so forth. Because who did you have sport to Kumbulu? See, figure in 2014, I said, you did something very good once. You offered school sports assistance to education. You said it was a pilot project. And I said to you, DJ, the problem with South Africa is that we pilot and pilot and cancel. After piloting, instead of spreading the program was cancelled. It was much better during the time when school sports assistants were still based in schools, assisting education to run sports in schools. If you can bring that one back, you'll not have a problem with education, because teachers will go on and do what they are doing, and your officials in schools will also go on and do what is supposed to be done in sports. For as long as you don't bring back that one, really, this one will be a vision that is very good out there, it will be pie in the sky kind of thing. It will never be achievable. This MOU really, Chairperson, it will never be achievable fully. It's never. It is never. It's never going to happen. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Although I am covered by the Honorable two members, my chair is on page 7 on the number of registered schools. If you look at the Eastern Cape, the total number of schools are 5,758, and the percentage there is 32%, 32.06%. The number of schools, Chair, Pinde Ujonge, the budget. I think the budget is valana nenana less call as the Eastern Cape. The budget. Akujongwa into kokuba mhlawumbi. How to the province perform. Kujongwa into ba how many schools are there so that we can give them a budget according to the number of schools. Then kulandele ngoku performance. Chairperson, I think mna kule situation ye underperforming ye provinces. There's a need of this committee to call to invite the all MECs who are underperforming with the department at the higher level, the DG here, so that they can explain what are the challenges where the provinces abajongene nazo. Because ngolendo sithetha kule level, abantu who are on the ground, they are not here. And APA were raising the issue of unions. Who are the unions? Who are the members of the unions? The members of the unions are the teachers, the educators who are in school. Remember, Chairperson, I'm coming from the Eastern Cape, far east. The DG from Sport, Arts and Culture. Who sport, ne?
Sport and Culture.
Yes. Can remember that. And after Kalegen Gonyaka, towards the end of the year, I have requested Ikit. You know a Gokwan and your son Wanya to Paisans, but who's Babene Babene Kit as for who carry ball the ground in a netball. Kibaza Melem na where me poke it. Balendo than a biz almost said Akai Pau everyone. Ukuba eza scholars apply sela lendo tonkwa umusep. Ukuba baya apply sela for his funds, babu anunetu seza scholar. Basumana nzima ku asistwa his scholar as we urban areas. Tina siti kwa skoka apa si John Ndogba. Kwa uteta nge Eastern Cape, uteta nge ndawe jani. Siti ndoba songa siteta nge dolo. Asi jongi toko kubizikolo ezipaya zi rural and abantu baba basuka phi ezantsi eqini ezantsi omayibene asizi-understand ezo zinto sithetha kule level thina oba sihleli apha ezidisikeni sifunda la maphepha but the real matter mna sihlale ezawukhe ndiyicele nje as uhlambe uzuze entlanganisweni ukuba khe uinvite the MECs. Umzekelo Honorable Makhupula and Upemi Majordina to come to this and to the not only the Eastern Cape province, because there are provinces who are struggling, you know ndiyacela bantwana benkosi ndikhonzayo ukuthi I'm appealing to this committee and the department and come siza kuyiva eyona ntsonko but asijongi asichoxa sijonge imali ifocus yethu semalini ayikho entweni kokuba ebunyanisweni kwenzeka ntoni on the ground. That is my concern, Chair. Andifuni ke ukuba ndibe sathi i-department mayikinabe kulo mcimbi. Ndifuna banabe ngalaa mini siba invited and ingapheli le term singababizanga because kaloku sithetha ngemali apha engachithwa kakuhle okanye ingawenzi umsebenzi ofanele uba iyawenza. Iyandiwarisha le nto soke i-Eastern Cape yaba ngunumber last. Ndingacingi uba imnandi, ayikho mnandi ze-DG. Into yoba sikho xa nibhale emaphepheni i-Eastern Cape nasoloko nayibeka yaba ngunumber last. Although ngamanye amaxesha i-Eastern Cape iza nequality not iquantity. I-Eastern Cape, i-Eastern Cape, when you are talking about the Eastern Cape, if we are with results, ujonge into yokokuba bapase kanjani iquality phambi. So thina sijonga amanana than the quality, sijonga iquantity. So ndiyarhalela sihlala into yoba lo mcimbi we-Eastern Cape iyandiwarish. No, but singayihleka nyhani but kodwa yona the really matter apha when you are coming from the Eastern Cape and umphathiswa or the abaphathiswa from the Eastern Cape, if you can invite them to this meeting, DG aba and these members nezi members zale committee awuthi nqa xa sebefumana the really matter what is happening in the Eastern Cape, also in the Northern Cape. You see? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. In the main, the outcry is that we look at the figures on the paper without giving due consideration of the demographics in the provinces. And then we have concerns about how the funding allocation is done, forgetting that there are many factors that are taken into account whenever funding is allocated, considering the state of the provinces, whether they're rural, urban, semi-urban, and all factors like that are taken into account. And then there is a request also to call the MEC of the underperforming provinces so that we try to seek a solution to this problem. Unfortunately, the information on paper is factual. It is factual information. You can't put it otherwise. However, that meeting maybe is going to assist in creating a better picture. Thank you. That was our Honorable Mpapo Spokane. We are the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the problems we're having with the sports in schools. Honorable members, Honorable member, let us consider that Malusi has quite a long presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. The problem that is existing within the sporting codes and our schools, meaning our black schools, and I'm talking from experience, Chairperson, is a change of cultural mindset. That's what we need, where we involve the parents of the learners. In our schools, the so-called black schools, black parents are not involved in their children's sporting activities. And in urban schools, white parents are involved. And also what we need to nurture and nourish the sport and promote these CAS DG, the CAS codes that are not existing in our black schools, is to take a school from the urban area and match it with a school in Khayelitsha. For instance, you take one day Girls High and you match it with Luhlaza or Joslovo High or Idimkize or Sezeka High School in Kukuletu. And then in the afternoon they come over. I've seen that happening with Unathali Dutoy in my own school. Children will come from Kukuletu, from Khayelitsha, and come and do swimming, and then that promoted. Because his school is you'll find Sindoba Zenza in netball, mostly. Ezinye is in the Sana net tennis, because our NASA resources, they don't do it. But if funding here will look at that, the force is called as urban because they have advantages. The force is the adopter. You'll get something. If it's happening academically with maths and science, they come to clinics and all supervised studies for maths, science, and English. It can happen with the sport. And it's a change of mindset and getting the parents involved. Another thing, I'm partly covered with this, but I need detailed information, whether it's in writing. The criteria that is used in the allocation of funding for sports. And my concern is mainly from the Eastern Cape, the where my origins come. Where? What's your name? The Eastern Cape has the highest budget.
Whatever happens, please direct it to the chairperson.
The Eastern Cape has the highest budget, but there's least participation, which also fits into the mindset that need to be fitted, that what does sport do? Because you're quite right to say sport decreases the crime rate and juvenile delinquency. But if you enforce that in assembly, the change of mindset would play a very important role in that. Sporting codes that are not existing in our school is also a concern. We can't just be playing two or three sports. I will say taking other models from other provinces is a good thing. I'll make an example. In the Western Cape, the Department of Arts and Culture with Mass Opportunity Development Center, it's working hand in hand with the Department of Basic Education, and DG will agree with this. But go to remote centers, they search for a talent, they do things, and that decreases rather, Shepherdson, Landover consumer drugs and substance abuse. Using youth cafes as friendly as they are, it will have an impact. Hence, you can see what is happening in the world. It's a matter of taking and sharing good models together. It's not about taking, but for the benefit of the child, taking a good model because it's going to work well and not get the mind constipated, but that model for the good of the child. And then at the end of the day, you'll achieve the best results. I thank you, Chairperson.
Let me, Honorable Mshodi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. LDG, you say something about the performance of the provinces. You said most of the provinces, I forget the page, they are performing very low. So I just want to check what is the part has been put in place to assist these provinces. Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, I want to know what can the Department of Sports do to ensure that coaches and volunteers get the training they needed to assist the children in the community better, Honorable Chairperson. And I think the last one, I think, Chair, is the input. Just to say, DG, I think a follow-up team is also needed from the department to ensure that equipment and upgraded sports groups have catered and monitored to be put on place. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson.
Honorable members, thank you very much. The Secretary has noted the questions by honourable members as directed at the beginning of the meeting. We've got time constraints. I am going to request and direct with the DGs respond very briefly on maybe some kind of concluding remarks as to how do we get the way forward from now. I am banking on the fact that the honorable members have actually requested that we have a session where we're going to have the MECs and the departments to deliberate over this issue, because
I agree there are competing priorities, but the fact of the matter, it is pointless to certificate a grade 12 that is already a drug addict because they have not been meaningfully occupied during the other times of their high school life. It is pointless. So we need not take sport as a Cinderella kind of thing. That should be done, by the way, because we are killing our own nation. Serious nations invest a lot of money in sports education because they are building a nation that should be sober and get involved in good habits and live a longer life and make a meaningful contribution. So I just want to say that I would ask the DGs. There are a lot of issues that were raised by sports and recreation in South Africa that are part of the conditions of the MOU and gaps that they still need to look into. And we heard that you are going to review the MOU. In any case, I want to believe that after the review, we are going to come up with a more kind of advanced and developmental kind of MOU that is going to take us forward, all of us. Let us be positive, other members. It is going to work. But it needs to be reviewed. It is going to work. I believe, I'm positive about it. But let us wait and see what is going to come out of that engagement between the two departments. From the side of the portfolio committee, let me give you an opportunity just to make concluding remarks. The questions are going to be relayed back to the committee in writing, please. And we have noted the questions. And we are going to make a follow-up in terms of whether they are being responded to in the interest of time. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Our concluding remarks would say that we have noted the questions, we'll respond in writing. We, however, are confident that this is working and that we have seen the results. We will do the review with basic education, and we are now happy that they are indeed a worthy and great partner to us to make this thing work. And from that point of view, we are, unlike the some committee members, we are quite confident that the system does work. We have seen it work, and we have seen schools that have not participated in sport in the last 22 years beginning to participate now and taking up the opportunities. It has not been easy, like any other program of this big magnitude. There were always teething problems and challenges, but I think we have worked out over 90% of the initial challenges. When I first came to this committee, the list was huge. I remember the barriers to participation were, we listed about 32 issues. Today we speak about just 4 or 5 issues that are still a problem, and we'll get through them. Thank you, Chair.
Over to DG for basic education.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, my colleagues. Chair, I fully agree with the DG for Sports and Recreation that indeed we've come a long way, but the very important point to highlight is that there are specific things that we need to sort out between the two departments. In fact, many of those that were even raised by himself will require the two departments to spend more time together to sort them out. There are also things that public representatives will have to help us sort out. Issues that relate to legislation and so on. For me, so that when we talk about radical socio-economic transformation, this is where it's needed in sports. And I mean, the change of legislation and other areas that where would require public representatives are very important. I also want to uplift the issue of broader civil society. We must never underestimate the fact that it can't be government alone and parliament driving the transformation of sports and issues of mass participation. It's got to be something that is taken up by civil society. Every aspect of civil society will have to be involved. And the last point that I want to make, Chair, is that I would like to humbly caution that we should be very careful how we compare provinces, because even in terms of budgets, we are not comparing apples to apples. For instance, you can't compare Western Cape with Eastern Cape. The sizes are not the same, the learner population is not the same, the needs and other dynamics might not be the same. And Honorable Samka might be right in some aspects in saying Eastern Cape might appear to be underperforming, but they are excelling in some sporting codes. It might well be that they focus on quality, and we're just looking at the numbers and so on. And I applaud the notion of getting all of us under one roof. You are the last hope, NCOP, of getting provinces and national departments together. And I think it's the right thing to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we conclude this session in that spirit. We then proceed to our next session. We can actually release Sports and Recreation South Africa to engage in future. We hand over to you, DG, to kickstart the process. Okay, Honorable Hutton.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll try to be as fast as I possibly can with the first part. The first part of the presentation will particularly look into the evidence-based report as a particular tool that is used to support the standardization process. The second part of the presentation will focus on the NSE examination and report back on that. Now, the evidence-based report is a detailed quality report that is compiled by the department in order to support standardization at the end of the year. This report contains specific interventions over and above the normal teaching that is done by teachers in the normal teaching. It also is presented twice a year to the Assessment Standards Committee in order to allow the committee to study the impact of each of the interventions that are offered. The report also contains a lot, both quantitative and qualitative information that focuses particularly on the interventions that are done both by the DBE and in provinces at the same time. In terms of the features of the report, it particularly looks into each intervention and classify it in terms of the focus of the intervention, the scope, how long it is, how many teachers and learners will be beneficiaries of the intervention, and also the pre- and post-testing is standard in all the interventions to ensure we get a sense of the impact of each one of them. Now, the evidence-based report has selected seven key areas which we believe shows the greatest potential to improve learner performance overall. And that range from language support, which includes home languages, EFOL, and African languages, and it stretch right through LDSM and support for progressed learners. If I can quickly just take you through some of it. In terms of language proficiency, for example, provinces focus on particular interventions that will assist learners. Not only we all understand the issues that or the challenge that we face with English first additional language, but also in terms of home language speaking. Now, in terms of English first additional language, we do have a particular strategy, which is English Across the Curriculum Strategy, that is implemented since the introduction of CAPS in 2011. And on an annual basis, in fact, up until now, provinces are implementing and supporting learners. The focus of that particular strategy is to ensure that every teacher becomes a language teacher and focuses on the four key language skills. This is all contained in the report that we provide to Malusi. For example, this is an example from the Free State and what they are doing besides the teaching in the class to support, for example, Sesotho home language in the province. In fact, it's both home language and FAL. Now, in terms of the Northwest, for example, there's an example of what Northwest is doing, KwaZulu-Natal. We have this for each of the provinces, and so I'll just quickly go through there. If we look at, in terms of subject interventions, for example, each of the provinces and DBE focuses particular attention on specific subjects. These are what we refer to as our high enrollment subjects, where the majority of our learners are found. There's 11 of them, and each province would then offer particular interventions. You can see there's a list of the provincial interventions that are offered by the majority, in fact, all the provinces, which includes, for example, vacation classes, which includes additional support material that is developed. We also, most provinces and the DBE is going quite big in terms of broadcasting and radio lessons, purely because of the reach it can have to assist even learners in your rural areas. As I mentioned before, vacation classes is one of the biggest interventions, and you can see from looking at the numbers that all provinces in 2016 supported learners during the camps. The camps ranged in number of days between the provinces from 5 to 10 days, but one can clearly see the number of learners that are supported in the winter camps, for example, in spring camps. If we look at, this is an example here of support that's given. This is particularly Northwest, but we have that for all provinces in terms of accounting, for example. What additional subject-specific support is provided to the class or was provided to the class of 2016 to ensure we improve their performance in particular subjects? We have this for all the 11 high enrollment subjects. In terms of progressed learners, we're also aware that that's a particular challenge for the system for the past 3 years particularly, and incrementally provinces have increased the type of support that they provide to progressed learners. There's an example of just a summary of what provinces are doing to assist progressed learners, starting from identification of the learners, the particular subjects where the learners need support, and then to be able to offer targeted interventions, which include, for example, camps that progressed learners are particularly taken to. In terms of ICT, this is quite, as we said, one of the biggest interventions that are being used by the province because of its potential to reach a big and a large number of learners, and also the potential it has to reduce costs in fact, to reach the learners. In terms of LTSM, besides the textbooks that are provided, the department is also going, in fact, the learners in 2016 also benefit from previous LTSM that were provided to them when they were in grade 10, 11, and 12. In terms of learner performance, all provinces and the DBE track learner performance on a quarterly basis. And the reason for the tracking is twofold, basically. We want to see progress. We want to measure what the progress is towards the target. But secondly, and more importantly, we want to be able to identify areas of intervention early, where province and the DBE needs to intervene at an earlier basis in order to provide or either to increase the support that we provide to learners. Now, tracking provinces track in various ways, and the most common is, for example, comparisons between the different cohorts, and then also comparison or tracking a cohort from grade 10, for example, some as early as grade 8, even up to grade 12. Part of our evidence-based report is also for each intervention to determine the impact of the interventions in order to, as was said this morning also, that we need to determine what the effect of this particular intervention is, and whether it worked and how well it worked. So most provinces in the interventions that are being offered to both teachers and learners are using impact studies to be able to determine the impact. This is just a few examples. In conclusion, I can just say, because the evidence-based report is entrenched within our national strategy for learner attainment, and that is our umbrella strategy to provide and to guide the whole sector towards very key specific areas that we redeem to be necessary to ensure the cohort of a particular year is supported.
Honorable Chairperson and members, DG, we're just going to continue from where she left off. I think that is a real record she said there. I'm going to try and make sure that I do as good as she did. What we're presenting here in the second part is mainly the NSC results, and we're saying that the NSC exam remains a very important instrument that we can use to evaluate the success of the sector. However, it is difficult sometimes to do that because there are so many factors that contribute to whatever outcomes that we see. But however, in the action plan, we have at least three key targets that we can actually measure from the NSC results, which has to do with the number of grade 12 learners that become eligible for university bachelor programs, the number that pass math, and the number that pass physical sciences. Now, the class of 2016, as we saw, it was the largest that we've ever seen in terms of the matric exams, but I just want to spend just a few minutes to talk about progression a little bit. My predecessor, Cheryl, when she presented, mentioned a lot of interventions that the department did with regards to this group of learners. When this policy was implemented in the FET band to say that learners should not spend more than 4 years in the phase, I think it got a lot of attention from the public. But we can see from the interventions that the department has been doing that a lot of good has come out of it, especially because it was one of the intention of that program was to assist the department to minimize issues of dropout and to maximize school retention. And we would indicate as I go on this presentation the good that has come out of those grade 12 learners who were progressed from grade 11 last year to the grade 12 class. However, to prevent people from just moving willy-nilly to grade 12 without actually making any contributions from their side, In 2016, the department also put developed some criteria or preconditions for progression. So it's not just about the fact that you are repeating the grade, but it's about the fact that you have met some other criteria. And that criteria is in the presentation. I'm not going to waste much time, but just to indicate that at least you have to pass 4 of the 7 subjects. You can't just fail everything and be progressed. And you should be seen to be attending school regularly, not absent from school for more than 20 days without a valid reason, and of course completing all your SBA requirements. Now, on the basis of that as well, these learners were tracked very carefully in grade 12, and where it was seen that they required some additional support, they were advised possibly not to write all the subjects in one sitting, but to go through the modular route where they write a select number of subjects. And that also requires them to meet certain criteria. For example, the department doesn't encourage every learner to just decide to modularize. Those who can, they are actually encouraged to do all their 7 subjects in one sitting. Only those who have written the trial exam, and after the trial exam, it's obvious that they have failed maybe 3 or even more than 3 subjects, and you see that these candidates are going to struggle. Those are the ones that are given the opportunity to do the examination in 2 sittings, writing the first one in November and completing in June of the subsequent years. As members will know already that our June exam is also a fully fledged exam offering all the subjects that are offered in the November examination. Now, this is how the figures look like. I won't spend much time there because in the interest of time, but we can see that the number of progress learners increased in 2016 and the numbers who wrote and passed in 2016 increased compared to all the others. I would skip most of the results slides because I think that you have engaged with that. If there are questions with regards to that, we are going to come back and maybe put more flesh on that. Now, I just want to go on quickly, and all of these slides I'm skipping. I am going to summarize in what we call the significant gains. So overall, we are saying that in terms of 2016, the sector made these significant gains. I mentioned 3 key aspects that are in the action plan, and in any all of those 3 key aspects, we can see gains. One of them being the number of candidates who passed mathematics, that increased, number who passed physical science, that increased, number who even wrote mathematics in terms of math participation, also increased. We can see the numbers there on the slide. The percentage of candidates who achieved who qualified for bachelor studies, also the numbers increased in 2016 compared to 2017. But I think very important, in math especially, we had 33,511 learners who achieved a mark of 60% and more. So not just numbers passing, but it's also the quality of the passes that we're getting. But also, another point of this is that of this increase, actually 1,700 of them from 2015 compared to 1,308 of them in 2016 were actually black learners. So from these numbers that achieved 60% and more, we see that there's a good representation of African learners in that group as well. Now, of course, 32 of our 82 districts achieved the pass rate of 80% and above. And the number of districts that are attaining a pass rate of below 50% decreased from 8 to 5. So in general, we can say those are the significant gains. One more thing I would want to mention with regards to our gains is the fact that the schools that are in the lower quintiles, the lower socioeconomic group, the quintile 1 to 3 schools, we're also beginning to see very good quality passes from those. Previously, if you compare the number of bachelor achievements in quintile 1 to 3 to what you get in quintile 4 to 5, you'll find you had more in 4 to 5 than 1 to 3. But the story has changed in the past few years and is even getting better. You're having more learners in quintile 1 to 3 who are achieving bachelor passes in terms of the numbers. We're not talking the percentages. We understand that there are more learners in that group, and if you look at the percentage, it might be lower than quintile 4 to 5. But number to number, you see that there are more in quintile 1 to 3 compared to 4 to 5. So we're getting good quality passes at that level as well. And in total, most of our schools now are falling in the bracket of the 80% and above performance. Now, I just want to share very quickly what we call the inclusive basket of criteria. In the past years, we have always looked at the performance of schools, of provinces, of districts, based on the overall pass percentage. But now we're beginning to use other quality indicators, because it's not just about the quantity anymore, it's about the quality. Now, so we're using other key criteria to also evaluate the performance of the different district schools and provinces. Now, this is a list of the different types of criteria that we're trying to look at, because these are also indicators of quality that are critical nationally. For example, the mathematics pass percentage, as I mentioned also, that is even in the action plan, the physical science pass percentage, bachelor attainment, distinction percentage, out of the number of passes that are in a school, a province, or a district, how many of them are distinctions? What is the mathematics participation rate? What is the throughput rate? So all of these critical indicators, we're now putting them together to form what we call a basket, an inclusive basket of criteria. And we use that basket of criteria to now evaluate the performance of each province, district, or school. Now, if we look at what we have there in this slide, for example, you could, maybe if we take KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, the overall pass percentage for KwaZulu-Natal, we say, is 66.4%. Now, if you compare KZN with the rest of the provinces using the overall pass percentage only, it looks as if KZN is a little bit down. But when you take each indicator, go, for instance, to the indicator that talks about percentage mathematics participation rate, you find that KwaZulu-Natal is actually the top, is the highest in terms of maths participation. 54.6% of their candidates are taking mathematics, which is actually the direction that we want to encourage other provinces and schools in general to go. And so one by one, we can go through each of these criteria and come up with an inclusive score. And on the basis of that, we can begin to intervene at school level, at district, or at provincial level to say, in this indicator, you're not doing very well. In as much as you're passing or your overall pass percentage is good, look at these other aspects of quality. Now, these other slides are just taking each of the indicators and showing you the performance per province. I'll go through those. Now, this slide, we're just trying to say that we can take this evaluation or this analysis to a district level. So you can see all the KZN districts there. We could do that with every province, and we can do it at a school level. So this provides very good data that can assist teachers, principals, education inspectors, or all of those in education to actually plan their interventions and programs for improvement. Now, with regards to the diagnostic analysis, after the examination as well, we did a diagnostic analysis of the performance of learners in selected subjects. We've done this consistently for the past few years, and the intention is to be able to track and to see areas of weaknesses in the content that are highlighted as problematic in previous years, to see whether they are improving, and to also inform our interventions and our programs for the particular year. So we did that in 2016 as well across 10 key subjects, and I'm just going to mention one or two areas of concern that we found, in as much as we found a lot of good. For example, we found that the responses of our candidates have improved across the board. Now, even when the candidates did not know the correct answers, they didn't just write something that made no sense. It was in the direction, which shows that there was some teaching and learning even though. So for us, that is an encouraging thing to say that the quality of the responses are improving. However, we're still battling with aspects of mathematical skills that are deficient and language skills that are deficient. Now, so what we have provided is we've done this diagnostic report, and we've made it available to schools, and the diagnostic report actually gives an indication at a per question and even sub-question level of the areas of weaknesses and how the candidates have performed. If you look at the slide that is up there, it shows you, for instance, a life sciences paper one, and it tells you what the average performance is per question in that paper. Now, by just looking at it quickly, you see that question 3, for example, 42% was the average and is the lowest average, which tells you that maybe candidates didn't do too well in that question. And then you can now look at what topics
were covered in that question, and that could direct the province or the district in their intervention. In fact, it goes to a sub-question level where, for example, we said question 3 was not well performed, but you go to question 3 and you say, what was the issue there? If you look at it, 3.3 was actually good average. It was 59%. But if you look at 3.4, it was 31%, actually the poorest in the entire paper. Then you can say, okay, aspects of pollution may not have been well covered, and that becomes a particular content area that could be looked at when the other part of the sector begins to design intervention programs. Now, school-based assessment also remains a key component, because school-based assessment is not just about the 25% that would form the final examination mark, but that process also helps to evaluate learners and helps to assist them and sort out areas of weaknesses, even in formative learning, before they write the final examination. And so we use school-based assessment as also the quality of it as an indicator of what we're going to possibly find at the end of the year. Last year, when the DBE went out, there were a number of areas of challenges which we have listed there, and we have also listed how we propose to address those challenges in 2017 going forward. For example, there were some tasks that were not of the standard that is expected, and we're looking at training this year at different levels to sort out those areas of weaknesses. But the important thing I want to mention is that we did see a lot of improvement with regards to the quality of our school-based assessment, because one of the major interventions we did last year was that we did a comparative analysis of the school-based assessment marks against the examination mark. So we looked at the averages for the SBA and compared that with what the school was getting for the exam. And if there was a big discrepancy, then we knew that, okay, maybe there was something wrong with the school-based assessment quality. But if you, I'm not going to go through the details of this slide, but what we found in general, in a nutshell, is that in 2015, the discrepancy was very high. But in 2016, it has begun to narrow. So where you found, for example, you had a number of schools where the SBA marks were rejected by Umalusi. The number that was rejected in 2016 is beginning to narrow. Where you have a number of schools that had a wide variation in their averages with, in the SBA compared to the exam mark, those averages are getting closer. So what you're getting is school scoring in the SBA is getting very close to what they're having in the exam. So basically, it's becoming a good predictor of what you are going to see at the end when the candidates write. So we are happy with that. Now, in conclusion, therefore, I think what the DBE has done is that we have taken the examination results data, SBA results data, and all of this information that has been generated from the system, and all of that repackaging and providing to provinces to actually inform their interventions and their programs for 2017 as they prepare for the NSE exam. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. The presentation was very detailed, very, very detailed. I want to thank the department. It's going to assist us, because as members, we've got to get the information from the document. We are hard-pressed for time. Then we'll ask for Umalusi to do their presentation.
Chairperson, honorable members of the Select Committee. I need to just tender the apology of Professor John Volming, Chairperson of Council, who was supposed to be here with us. Unfortunately, due to other prior commitments, he could not make it. Chairperson, I'm going to be talking to the analysis of the 2016 National Senior Certificate Quality Assurance of Assessment in the Public and Private Assessment Bodies. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip the private assessment bodies, that is IV and Sakai, but I need to emphasize the fact that the same quality assurance regime that we follow for the DBE, we follow with all other assessment bodies. I'm emphasizing this because the tendency is for us to only focus on the DBE, which is not fair, as if they are the only ones who go through the rigor of the quality assurance of Fumalusi, but the rest of the others do as well. So I'll skip the slides of Sakai and IEB for the members to read at their leisure so that we manage time. First of all, we derive our mandate from an Act of Parliament, the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act. And I'm quoting Section 17, which says, the Council, with the concurrence of the Director General, and after consultation with the relevant assessment body or education institution, approve the publication of the results of learners if the Council is satisfied that the assessment body or education institution has done the following. They have conducted the assessment in a free and fair manner, free from any irregularity that may jeopardize the integrity of the assessment and its outcomes. They have complied with the requirements prescribed by Council for conducting assessment. They have applied the standards prescribed by the Council with the learner, which a learner is required to comply with in order to obtain a certificate. Also complied with every other condition determined by Council. The Council from time to time will determine policy that has to be adhered to. Chairperson, we also derive our mandate from the National Qualifications Framework, and we quote here Section 27H, which says the Quality Council, Umalusi, must develop and implement policy and criteria for assessment for the publication of for the qualification on its sub-framework. The quality assurance framework that we follow is as follows. I'm going to rattle through the list, but these are the things that we do as we quality assure the different bodies that we deal with. First of all, we evaluate and we give a license accreditation to the assessment bodies. We do periodic inspections of assessment bodies. We do ongoing monitoring of the assessment systems. We quality assure the external examinations through the moderation of question papers, practical assessment tasks, and the CATs, monitoring moderation of school-based assessments, monitoring of the conduct, administration, management of assessment and examination processes, moderation of marking, and management of concessions, and examination irregularities, and we do also standardization. I'm going to dedicate some time to standardization, which is a process that is not fully understood by the majority of our people, so I'll go to that one later on, and also indicate while still on this that we are going to be having an advocacy campaign throughout the country to educate South Africans on standardization throughout the year, so that by the time we release the results at the end of the year, there should be no confusion about the process. Now, I'm talking here, Chairperson, about the feedback on the quality assurance of assessment process in the public institutions, public assessment bodies. I'm talking here specifically about the Department of Basic Education. Moderation of question papers, that's what we do. All the papers are sent by the different assessment bodies, in this instance, by the DBE. The DBE also does internal moderation of the question papers. Then they bring them to us for external moderation, and they then get an Umalusi stamp of approval for the papers to be written. We moderate SBA school-based assessment. We do statistical moderation of SBA. We monitor the marker selection and training. We verify marking. And we also look at areas of poor performance in gateway subjects, verification of marking findings, and we do the tracking directives for compliance. That's what we do. Now, if we're to look at that slide, we see that the question papers were moderated by Umalusi. Percentage of question papers moderated at first moderation improved from 11.7 5% in November 2015 to 22.6%. That's a huge improvement. Now, those that were approved at second moderation improved from 67 to 68. Level 3, 17 to 8, and 4, 2.3 to 0.8. Overall, the examiners of the Department of Basic Education are improving in terms of meeting the set standards of Umar Hussein. Overall, in 2016, we saw a tremendous improvement. And then we also see the examiners in these papers in particular, and the list is given there, are commended for achieving acceptable standards in the setting of the examination question papers. And the subjects are listed there. And then also that areas of weakness, the failure of both examiners and Tenbo to address the current non-compliance that led to some papers requiring more than two moderation. The 12 question papers concerned are listed in the list. And it is important to note that this report is also given to the department for the DG and the minister to take note of the areas of strength and the areas of weakness so that the necessary remedial measures could be taken. There is still inconsistency in how examiners and internal moderators interpret higher order cognitive skills. There is lack of approved textbooks in mathematics, in music in particular, and this poses a challenge for both examiners and candidates, especially with contents based on jazz and indigenous music. There are no textbooks, and this is creating problems in music. Now, we're making the following recommendation for improvement, and we check all these recommendations to see that the department is complying. We're asking the department to address the conduct of those examiners and internal moderators whose papers failed to repeatedly adhere to the requirements for compliance, which resulted in their papers requiring more than two external moderations. Develop strategies to improve the examiners and internal moderators' abilities to identify and set high-order questions, balance the distribution of cognitive levels within question papers. The examiners have to be trained in that regard. We did a school-based assessment moderation of the subjects that are listed on the slide. I'm not going to read the slide, but the subjects are listed there. We did the SBA moderation of all those subjects. In terms of areas of good practice, there was adequate content coverage in most subjects. Many teachers' files and evidence of learner performance were well presented. They were neat, dated, organized, and well indexed. This made moderation relatively manageable. Evidence of internal moderation observed in most of the teacher and learner files, use of common tasks for capacity building and promoting equivalence of standards. Areas of weakness. There's been poor handling of irregularities committed during school-based assessment. There is high prevalence of mass copying in most SBA tasks. This has been identified across subjects, across provinces. However, very little is done to combat this act of dishonesty. So that would say the schools should do something about this. Absence of ineffective school assessment irregularity committees across the provinces. So the schools don't have irregularity committees. Lack of internal moderation of SBA tasks at all levels in most of the school sampled. The availability of supplies, equipment, and tools is a challenge for subjects with practical components like consumer studies and hospitality studies, so that the learners without that equipment and those tools, they are not able to do their practicals. There is also a failure to provide analysis grids in some teachers' files, indicating the spread and balance of content and cognitive levels required by each task. The use of textbooks, recycled DB question papers and exemplars without adjustment compromises the fairness and reliability of assessment tasks. Poorly developed practical tasks for physical science and life sciences that fail to address the purpose of developing proper scientific practical skills.
in some schools, tasks that do not qualify as practical tasks are at times administered. Now we're making the same following recommendation for SDA moderation, that irregularities committees should be established at the schools, and the irregularities committed during the conduct of SBA should be recorded, reported, and followed up by the provincial education department. I've already said number two, that irregularities committees must be established at the schools. The DDE needs to ensure that a joint workshop on development and moderation of assessment tasks is conducted by curriculum staff at all districts across the provinces. The department needs to ensure that all the schools offering subjects with a practical component has adequate supply of resources, equipment, and infrastructure. The curriculum directorate needs to ensure that the completion and submission of assessment grades is made compulsory for all SBA tasks across the subjects. Educators need to be trained on how to develop quality assessment tasks and to be able to use previous question papers innovatively without opening up the question papers to a high level of predictability.
Let me just interject you, CEO. I would request that you actually move quite fast. We are left with 15 minutes.
Okay.
Looking at the pages left, you still have a long way to go.
Okay. Now, those are the areas of improvement for SBA. The members can read them at their leisure. I need to indicate that where the SBA and the written component differ, there are adjustments that are done. Where the teachers have been too strict in SBA, when we look at the written component, there are adjustments that we do. In the same breath, where the teachers have been too lenient with SBA, we also adjust them, as you might see. The slide there indicates the point. It illustrates the point. Now, we indicate the subject with an SBA mean that is 15% and more that were adjusted. In those subjects, we had to adjust the SBA mark. Now, we also addressing the issues that contribute to inflated SBA marks. I'm not going to talk to that, but they all center around poor marking by the educators. Poor questions that the learners are given, poor marking and application of rubrics. I'm not going to go through this. The areas of weaknesses I indicated, Chair, the members are free to read for themselves. And we're also giving the department recommendations on how they could improve in the situation. We also look at the marker selection and training. And we're coming with areas of good practice because we go and monitor marker selection and training. We're raising areas of weakness, areas of strength, and we're also making recommendations to the department. I'm going to skip those. The slides that you see, Chairperson, now, are the weaknesses in the individual subjects. I'm just going to summarize. I'm not going to go through the individual subjects. Let me summarize and say the weaknesses are as a result of the content that is taught in grade 10 and 11, but tested in grade 12. Because the NSC is a three-year qualification. So some content that is taught in grade 10 and 11 is only tested in grade 12. So learners would have forgotten about that content. Further, it is in instances where calculations have to be done and the graphs have to be used. And that goes for mathematical literacy, that goes for economics, it goes for all subjects that have got a calculation component. Our learners can calculate. Now, I skip all those slides that deal with the individual subject. Now, the slides that follow up for the IEB, they follow the same pattern as the DBE. And I'm going to skip all those DBE, IEB slides. And then the slides that follow are from SACAI, South African Comprehensive Assessment Institute. They also follow the same pattern that I spoke to earlier on the DBE. I'm going to skip the SACAI slides. The honorable members are free to read those at their leisure. Now, I'm going to talk to standardization, which is something that we are mandated to do according to our founding act, the GenFEDQA Act. It says council may adjust raw marks.
I need to emphasize that it's an international practice for large-scale assessment systems. And that standardization is a process used to mitigate the effect of factors other than the learner's knowledge and aptitude on the learner's performance. The sources of variability may come as a result of the difficulty in the question papers, undetected errors, learner interpretation of the question. Let me just try and explain the point. The examiners may think, with the moderator, they pitched the question at this level, only to find that the question is very difficult for the learner. Now, this becomes unfair for the learners of 2016, and vice versa. They may think they pitched the question at the right level, only to find that they've made it too easy. Now, standardization will come in to standardize so that the learner is not advantaged or disadvantaged by the English he's writing. Undetected errors would be things like a bracket, a comma, that has been omitted in the question paper of mathematics or physical science, which ultimately throws the learners off because the learner struggles with this formula, which is incorrect in the question paper. This happens because all these things are done by human beings, and errors creep in sometimes. Learner interpretation of the question. I like this example, and I'm going to make it again, where learners were requested to write an essay in Afrikaans on an Arab room. And the so-to-speaking Spade and so-to-speaking learners wrote about the buffalo, which is a Nare. Nare. They wrote, I mean, they were thrown off by the interpretation of the question. Now, sometimes also examiners ask questions, learners questions that they were never exposed to because of their context. One honorable member in the portfolio committee on basic education talked about an instance where he was requested to write about the journey by train, when he has not seen a train in his life. So all those things sometimes creep in and they disadvantage the learner. So we standardize to ensure that no learner is advantaged or disadvantaged. I've already explained that we want to achieve comparability and consistency from one year to the other so that we deliver a constant product to the colleges, Tibet colleges, to the universities and to society in general, so that the symbol A of 2016 is the same as the symbol A of 2009. That's what we're trying to do. This is what this slide is talking about. While previously we criticized for only looking at the statistics, which is a norm of 5 years, compared to the results of 2016, a norm which has been established through the average of 5 years, the past 5 years, we are not only doing that lately. What we do as Sumalus is that we consider qualitative reports from the external moderators, from the examiners, to say how did the learners experience the paper. You'd appreciate the fact that we don't field test the questions in our country. The first time the learner is exposed to a question paper is the day he faces it in the exam room. And that's the first time that we'll know how a learner has responded to a question paper. So we get those qualitative inputs and we compare them with the quantitative inputs. The practice of standardization has been inherited from the Joint Matriculation Board, JMB. It has been inherited from SAFSET. The only improvement that we have introduced is that we consider also qualitative reports. Chairperson, I'm going to, without any waste of time now, move to examples of standardization. But maybe before we go there, it may interest the members to note that out of the 58 subjects that the DBE submitted, 58, we retained raw marks in 26, we adjusted upwards in 28, we adjusted downwards in 4. And with the IB, out of the 64 subjects submitted, we retained 52 raw marks, adjusted upwards 7, adjusted downwards 5. Sakai, out of 28 received, raw marks 16, upwards 9, downwards 3. I need to just get to the other slides, though, when we are good. I just want to illustrate the points with the examples. What do we do to make it big? Okay. Chairperson, I'm going to make an example of, how do you do it, Zora? Okay. Zodwa is my IT specialist. Okay.
I think this is the best we can do. It's fine, sir. Chairperson, this shows accounting, and I'm going to show you on the slide that the mean average for all the 5 years, the mean will be 35, the median will be 31. Mm-hmm. And then it's a pity we can't see the other side of the slide, which is this part. This part, which shows the years in which these marks were accumulated, 2011, 2012, 2014, 2016, the raw marks of 2016 are indicated in red. Now, the mean and the median are, according to the norm, it has to be 35 and 31. Now, when you look at the rate, it is 40, 37. Am I right? Now the computer is making a suggestion to say, no, you have to put it down to 31 according to the norm. It suggests that you put it to 35 according to the norm. We don't just follow the computer, we debate, and after debating, we make a decision. Now you'll observe, if you look at the graph, that the red line is running ahead of all the other lines. It's running ahead of the norm. Is running ahead of all the other years. It means that the computer is now suggesting that we adjust the marks downwards. That's what we then do as a committee of council. I'm going to skip that and go to another one that illustrates a different point. Let me do 100. 100 will do. Or 75. 100 or 75. Let me do 75. Maybe 75 will be better. Okay, 75 is better. It's best. 125 is a bit tricky, Chairperson, in that you don't see the whole slide.
It is fine.
Hey. No, the department is much more clever than us. Okay. What is happening here is that we're looking at English home language. And I'll go much slower here because the slide is better. What is happening there is that considering all these years from 2011 up to 2015, it has now calculated the cumulative norm, which the median is 54.33, the mean is 54.33, and the median is 53.33. Now, when you go to the red line, it will show almost the same figure, so that the raw marks are close to the norm. It's close to the norm. And therefore, the computer suggests that we should retain almost the raw mark because they are almost the same. In this instance, we retain the raw mark because historically it shows that the scores of 2016 are on the norm. I want to come back to something. If there is a deviation from the norm, we have to get reasons from the DG why the deviation. Why has the learner scored badly? The DG may say, well, such and such a question was poorly crafted, and so forth and so on. We consider all that. In the same breath, if the results improve, and as you'll see with the next example, with the previous example, the results have improved, the DG has to tell us what he has done extraordinarily, that the learners should perform better. And where there are good reasons, compelling reasons, why the learners have done well, we retain the good mark. We retain the good mark. So that we are not in the business of just reducing marks. Where there is proper motivation, we also retain. Now let me go to the graph. The graph in this instance will show that the red line is running almost parallel, almost at the same line as the norm in the previous years. In this instance, we'll be compelled to retain the raw mark. Let me go to the last example, Chairperson. Then I'll stop. I'll stop immediately after that. Now I know. this is the cumulative norm from 2011 downwards up to 2015. Am I right? It says 37.20 mean, 36 median. If you go to the scores of 2016, they say 30, 27. It means this paper was a bit difficult. Are we agree? Now the computer is suggesting that we adjust upwards to 37 and 35, mean and median. Now look at the graph. Sorry for this. Christian. What has happened here? Okay. Can you look at this? You'll see that the red line is running here. It means that it was difficult. It was difficult. Chairperson, if we have time, I'll explain more and more on this graph. There are many insights that the committee of council makes out of this graph, but don't have the luxury of time. To show you the minutest interpretations that we go into, you'll see, now it says, this is saying the norm is here, but the learners, this is how they perform. You have to pull the raw marks and adjust them upwards. With motivation, of course, the DG has to give motivation. One thing that I've not spoken to, and that'll be 1 minute now, is the PES analysis. What we do is that for subjects in the same family, we'll check the learners we have registered for English, and we're also doing history, how they've performed in the two, because the two are related. You need language to be a historian. Now, if the learners have performed badly in history, but they've done well in English, it means that the history paper is suspect. There was a problem with the history paper. I can take also math and physical science. Leonard does well in mathematics and is also doing physical science. We expect him to perform on par in the two subjects because they are cognate subjects. Is that the correct word? Cognate. They are cognate subjects. They belong to the same family. You do well in math, we expect you to do well in physical science. All those are the things that we consider when you do standardization, and we call that pairs analysis. We analyze pairs of subjects to check how the learners are doing in each. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Last slide? Oh, they insist that I do the last slide. They want me to do the conclusion. Let me do it, Chairperson. Oh, Gosia, what's happening here? Okay, from current slide, okay. Now, we need to commend both the Department of Higher Education and Training, the Department of Basic Education, IB, Sakai, and the Benchmark for consistent improvement in the assessment practices over the years. Uma Lucy has witnessed a high level of compliance by the different assessment bodies in executing its directives for improvement in issues that were raised. Previously, we see an improvement from one exam cycle to the other. Despite a few areas of concern raised and a few irregularities reported during the administration of the 2016 NSCE examinations, Umaruji was satisfied with the assessment processes from the three assessment bodies, DBE, Sakai, and IEB. Thank you very much.
Now we welcome both presentations of DBE and Uma Lucy as a quality assurer. Let me hand over to honorable members to ask the question. Honorable Kaula said up first.
Thank you, Chair. We are now pressed for time. We have to leave for another meeting. Two questions to Uma Lucy. Your adjustments, either up or down, for DBE. I'm a little bit concerned that it's on too many subjects or learning areas. Does that not worry you? I'm saying because you said earlier on that when they set the papers, you also go through them and you check.
Mm-hmm.
You check everything, the quality, the standard, whatever. Now, when so many subjects show that you have to move upward, are you not concerned about that? Are you not worried about that? Does it not show that maybe quality work was not done in assessing the paper before it was written? And secondly, there was once an issue between the department and the teacher unions. Well, the department was insisting that to select the markers before they get given the job, they must be assessed. How far are we? Where do we stand with that now? And what is the opinion of Marcus on that issue? Is it going to help I also did have some questions for TB, but because of time, I'll stop here. Thank you.
Okay. Any other question from an honorable member? Honorable Hassan.
Also being aware of the time, just one brief question. If there are in the work that's being done in the Umuruzi, if there is a provincial deviation, does it get picked up, and does it get, how does it being in a specific subject, how does it then being handled, call it the analog? If there's a clear provincial deviation, or doesn't it happen? Thank you.
Those are all the questions. Mine is on the school-based assessment. I don't know if the bodies that are responsible for school-based assessments are given adequate training to do justice to school-based assessment. What mechanisms are there to ensure that they're empowered to do the school-based assessment properly? I heard during the presentation that there is an improvement comparing the school-based assessment grades and the performance jury examinations, but are they attended to, are they given training to ensure that they do the right thing? I want to believe also, DG, that SBA is not optional. It's something that everybody has to do, has to submit, complying with specific deadlines. And then the issue of progressed learners, I think it has, yes, it was by the GBE. You stated the fact that they are given options where they can be given an opportunity to write in modules, or they can write partial examinations and then complete the following year. Is that the only option? Is it not possible for them to write as private candidates, period, without having to impact on the picture of the results and having to split and explain that with them included, this is the percentage, with them excluded, this is the percentage? Is it not possible to make arrangements that they write as private candidates? I'm just asking if there is such a possibility. I'm happy about the basket of criteria that are inclusive, because they give us a clearer picture of what is actually happening. Seeing that Eastern Cape is the lowest performing and forget to actually highlight the areas where they are doing well, as a province, it could be Limpopo or any other province, I think that is a fair assessment. The issue of subject advisors. DG, when we go out to the districts for oversight, we do observe that there are districts that have got challenges with regard to the services of the subject advisory services. One reason that we have been given in one of the districts is that they don't have subject advisory services for certain specific subjects, or there is one that cannot service the entire district. What is the department doing? Because they've got a direct bearing on assisting the teachers, hence produce good results. Those are the few questions that I have. The others I will shelf and give to the secretary to write to you and respond in writing. You can respond both Malus and DG.
Let me respond first, and you have permission. The questions of Honorable Kaula, yes, we get worried when we have to adjust a lot of subjects, either upwards or downwards, either way. Our first bet is raw marks, and we celebrate when we have to take the majority of subjects as raw marks. So where there are a lot of adjustments, you get worried, and we know the reasons why. It happens because there's been a change in the syllabus.
and that the teachers are still struggling to find the new standards. They are still struggling. With the CAPS, introduction of the CAPS, we have seen a deviation. If we had to do a comparative analysis of the adjustment that we did after the introduction of the NSC in 2008, you'll see that with the SC, there was stability, old senior certificate. 2009, with the 8, with the introduction of the NSC, then we're all over. We had to adjust a lot of subjects. Now, the system was beginning to stabilize in terms of standardization. Then we introduced the CAPS, hence the variance. Also, we have made a commitment with the DG and his department that we are going to be pushing the boundaries in terms of the level of difficulties of the question papers. Mm-hmm. We want to maintain standards and high standards for our letters so that they are competitive in the global village. That is going to mean the question papers are getting harder and harder every year, so they don't stagnate as a country. That may call for more adjustments until you are able to find the standard where we want the standard to be. The learners, when the syllabus change, they don't have old question papers to benchmark on. The teachers do not know the style yet of how the papers are set. That is why we struggle with the standards, and then we have to adjust upwards. Yes, indeed. One of the provinces is doing marker competence tests for marker selection. Uma Lucy has been non-committal on the matter, and I'll give the reasons why we have been non-committal. The instrument that is used to test the marker competency has not been quality assured by Uma Lucy. We can't vouch for it. We don't know the instrument. And so we have been saying, until the department is able to pronounce, we are not going to pronounce. And the department invites us to say, check the instrument for us. After checking the instrument, we'll be able to say, yes, we vouch for this instrument. So our position has been non-committal. We commit to supporting any move that will perfect proper selection of markers. Anything that will come that is innovative, we'll support. But it is not for us to initiate. Now, it is not easy to detect provincial deviation. In fact, when we standardize the whole country, I'm not able to see where the learners from the Eastern Cape are lying on the graph, those graphs that I showed you, where the learners from Gauteng, Western Cape, and so forth and so on. The only thing that we can attest to are all the processes up to standardization, because we go out and check whether people adhere to policy in terms of how they write examinations, distribution of question papers, marking. We check that in different provinces. And we're able to pronounce and say, in such and such a province, there was a problem with marking mathematics. But at the point of standardization, we see the full picture of the country without singling out the individual provinces. When it comes to SBA, SBA is compulsory, but where SBA is weak, either the teachers were too strict and exceeded the limit of 15%, or too lenient and exceeded the limit of 15%. The learners lose out because the SBA mark is dropped. Now they have to fend for themselves only on the written component, and there is a conversion to make the 75% and the 75% component 100%. And the 100% then is considered from the written component only. So we want to encourage the department to really train the teachers in SBA. SBA, it goes with the training that the teachers have received from the university. Because as a teacher trainee, I was trained on how to set questions. And the universities have to be strengthened. And the DG told me at one point that he's talking to the deans of education to strengthen this area. Once they are in the service, it can only be with the help of the subject advisors, where they are trained to set the proper instruments. Let me see. We the council has advised, and I'll be writing to the department soon, that when we release the results, we should have no distinction between the progress learners and the non-progress learners. We should lump them together. Because we have checked, as Uma Lucy, the difference in performance between progress learners and non-progress learners is negligible. It's very small, to the point that where we distinguish between progress and non-progress learners, we're just confusing the nation, because we have done the test. The learners who have progressed are no different from those who are non-progressed in terms of the percentage margin. And in fact of the matter, Umalusi Council is making is that these learners have attended school full time. They may be progressed, but they've been in class every day. So we have to account for them in the same way. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My part, I'm done.
Does the teacher want to say anything?
Yes, Chair, I've got a lot, but I'll narrow them to a few. Pick on the comment made by the CEO, my suggestion is that some of the things that are pending, we can't pronounce them in meetings of this nature, because these are decisions of the Council of Education Ministers, so I still have to go and report to them. I want to implore you to, you now have the presentation, look at how the outcomes of standardization of the different assessment bodies have been. What is not included is the MCV, which I don't see here. But truth be told is that the outcomes of other assessment bodies, private assessment bodies, are more favorable than the outcomes of DBE. And it pains me that when people just focus on the Department of Basic Education without looking at the outcomes of other assessment bodies, which says to me the elites tend to protect their likes and they attack the results of the poor and the unemployed and the marginalized. I hope that comment will be taken in the spirit that it requires. A competency assessment of markers, I think the CEO said something about it. There are no guarantees there that if teachers are subjected to competency of markers for selection, then the outcomes will be absolutely different. But it does contribute, but its contribution has not been scientifically really tested and confirmed. And Chairperson, you are right, school-based assessment, we've now embarked on training, and I think you have seen the difference, and we are going to heighten training as Ms. Okubanjo indicated there. Progress learners, the CEO has made his observation, but I think the Council of Education Ministers will look at what Umalus is advising on the matter. Subject advisors, I can only say that I agree with you. In conclusion, if you ask me, I'm of the view that we should have come out with much more favorable outcomes of standardization last time than it has been. But I subject myself and the entire sector to the decisions of Umalusi. I'm of a strong view that of all these assessment bodies, we are the only assessment body that at least provides evidence, a comprehensive evidence of what we think has gone into the system in terms of qualitative inputs. And I think that the jury is still out there to really determine as to whether the other assessment bodies are able to match the contribution that we are making in terms of qualitative inputs. Furthermore, I even want to stretch it further and say, I still want to see a comparison with other countries, whether other countries go to the same level that we do in terms of providing evidence of whether there has been an impact in the system or not. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for the responses. We've come to the end of the engagement. Let me take this opportunity to thank the CEO of Maluti for the presentation and the responses as well. And confusing us with the medium, the mode, standard deviation, and all those terminologies. We are learning a little bit of stats. We are going to grow from strength to strength. But thank you. It was a very important presentation. We have got a duty as a member to read the documentation because we didn't find time to go through each page by page. In fact, there is no need for that to happen. For as long as the department
and all the other agencies give us the notes in good time. To get the presentations in the evening prior to the meeting really does not give us space as members to actually go through and be able to make a meaningful input. We just pick here and there as the discussion flows, whereas we should have given ourselves time to study. Nonetheless, the argument that you are the most qualitative kind of quality assurer, DG, I will take it, but I'll have to look into whether that is accurate enough. We want to thank you for the work that you're doing. We've improved on the results, but I want to believe that we're also improving in the lower grades, because that is what gives us quality in the final analysis. Thank you very much. We are still going to engage on the annual report and get further detail on issues that may be outstanding. No, it will be about our next engagement. It will be about stress level, not the
annual
report. Honourable members, unfortunately, other members have left. We got an invitation. I was asked by the PLO whether we got an invitation for National Awards of DPE on the 25th of March. I said I did not see the invite. I'm told it was sent to Andisa, the PA, who is not at work on leave, but then that invitation. Unontando will send it through to the members. We are invited by DPE to the National Awards on the 25th of March. On Monday of that very same week, we are going to Pumala. So members will decide whether they have an opportunity to go or not.
There was no question. Okay. It has been in our
question. But normally it's Kalaka, they always use that thing. Yes. Yes. Have you arranged your source? Or where is the source? Okay. How long does it take? What is the king? Oh, they say that the transport is at the front here. We're going to pick up some tablets and some ointments to use in Imbangala. But alternatively, you can consult the travel doctors. They are in some of the airports. I normally use them if the time constraints are preventing. But you pay for it.
So how long shall it take to get there and come back? I'm not sure how long it's going to take there. Can we do it at that table?
Members that have time to go there, let them rush there now.
Yes.
We may not all go, but those that have got time, they can rush there. If it's a matter of picking up tablets and ointments, I don't think it's going to take a long time.
Thank you.
langa pambili.
Well, no.
Where we normally get picked up. Let me go. Oba gets started and then go to the other side.
I'm going to go to the next one.